coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Hey Kids Comics. I'm not starting it the way I did last time because Cole made fun of me. We're going to find a new intro at some point. I am Andrew Farmer. With me, as always, is the Jedi Cole Houston.
Naturally.
And we are here to close out a story arc that has been – we've had a really good summer fun run, I think, Cole.
Oh, but I'm afraid first we've got – we actually have a sponsor.
Oh, do we?
For this episode. Yeah, let me cue up the tape here.
All right.
Hello, I'm Don Kirshner. If it's Thursday, then you know it's time for Don Kirshner's Ragnarok Concert. You bet your Asgard.
Don, you know what? I really appreciate that Don supports the show.
I know, isn't it? It's like...
But I would really like it if Don would hire someone else to do his spots.
Hey, the curse doesn't do it that way.
I know. But yeah, we're at the end of this story arc. We've had a huge summer fun run. We've had summer fun. We've had action figures. We've had movies. So we're gonna close out the summer strong with. And I was talking about this with these guys before the show, and I was thinking about it earlier. The Michael McDonald to our Doobie Brothers, Eddie Funky Cole Medina, is joining us again. Like I said, he sings on everybody's favorite hits.
Yeah, he's on the best songs. The others are like all B-side. The rest of our podcasting career has just been B-sides.
It has.
Not
that they've been B-sides, right? It's just that, you know, the big hits.
In my case, it was C-sides.
Super Sports Balls.
Yes.
The food episode.
Oh my gosh, I forgot about that one.
the infamous Jackson 5 Kirby Crackle comment.
Yes!
The figments.
I want that on my tombstone, by the way. The Jackson 5 are not Kirby dots.
the figments crossover event.
Oh my gosh. Someone brought that up to me today. Just today, that episode.
He's been here knocking him out with us the whole time, so we thought it was only fitting that he come try to wrangle this thing at the end of a story arc, because we get punchy.
He's just going to fly in like a robin.
Like he's going to fly in like a condor man is what he's going to do.
Oh, there you go.
That's right. I'm a professional.
There it is.
I'm a professional, damn it. So, yeah, this is the end of the Cinephiles. Cinephiles?
Yeah, Cinephiles, yes.
Cinephile story arc, I don't know. It's issue 243. Remember, you might not like our show, but at least we tell you what number you're on that you've
That's
listened
right.
to.
Occasionally.
And it is a free show, so you get what you pay for. So, right. Cole, what are we doing tonight?
This is this is straight out of comics, and we're going to talk about movies that have the flavor of a comic book. Movie, the flavor of comics, but are not based on a comic book property.
And there are a lot of them. That's the awesome thing.
They're straight out of comics.
They're straight out. How many straight outas do you have now, Cole?
Wow, there's several. I'm collecting them all. It's like Pokemon. For Alcon and Infinicon, we have the category in Pop Goes Infinicon or Pop Goes Alcon, alternately, straight out of console.
I kind of feel like this.
That's genius.
I kind of feel like this is racist, but I don't know, so I'm just going to let it go.
Wait, I'm not getting the racist part.
I don't know.
Maybe I've had too much wine.
Maybe it's
appropriation.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah, it might be. I just...
I don't know.
I put an ice cube in my water and then just...
in your iced tea, you mean? You put the
ice cube in my iced tea, which is, yeah, I'd probably get beaten up for that concept.
But yeah, so we thought it would be fun if we just kind of all went through, collected some of our favorite non-comic or superhero movies, and just had a little discussion about why we like them. And, you know, do they hold up over time?
And also how sometimes unexpectedly a film, I mean, there are some that we're going to talk about that are decidedly have their pedigree in comics.
Oh, sure.
And then there are those that just literally fall into the purview. I mean, they seem like they would have been adapted from a really good comic.
And the really cool thing about it is, and one thing I wanted to talk about right at the top, thank God and whoever decided to, you know, whatever idea machine makes these things, because there are all these comic books out there. There are all these prepackaged, pre-planned stories that you could pick up and produce and make. These are original ideas and original universes for the most part that people made that are fun, and it would almost be unheard of now. Because we haven't – when is the last time you probably – well, a big-budget, original superhero film doesn't happen anymore. The last one I can remember that I saw in a theater was Avengers Grimm, Cole.
Oh, wow.
And that played in, like, one theater.
Yeah, it played at the Texas Theater for one damn night.
Right, exactly, because I almost went to that.
I did.
Extremely lucky you got to see that on a big screen.
Oh, God, we're the luckiest.
Is lucky the word we're looking for?
Eddie, oh, yeah, I think so.
Eddie, you know they made a sequel.
It was a transcendent experience.
They made a sequel. You know that, right?
No, I did not know that. I have yet to see the first one.
Oh, it's
is
so
it, am
good.
I missing out?
You have
I'm
to
guessing
see
I'm
it.
Missing out.
No, you have to see it. I will choose that as one of mine. How about that? I will choose. I am one shy of having a full deck. I'm way more than one shy of having a full deck. But I am one shy of having my full roster of non-comic book. It's Disney princesses in the world of God. It's so. I don't know how they got there. Here's the thing, right? Like, you watch it and you're like, what is happening right now? Loki, as played by, I believe it was Casper Van Dien, who went on
what?
The... yeah.
What?
Oh, yeah, I believe you're right.
Yeah, who went on Mr. the...
Mr. Johnny Rico / Tarzan.
Yes. But in order for this role to... I think he went on the machinist Christian Bale diet to get there. Because he is like...
No!
Fallow and thin and just looks haggard and awful.
I think at that point he literally was a starving actor.
Gosh,
you're
horrible.
Right.
Y'all are horrible.
He was in between Mega Shark movies at that point.
Yeah,
he's got a,
he really was. They actually pulled up on the street corner.
I was going to say between a Mega Code movies, but I think I'm the only one that saw the Omega Code.
No, I saw the first one. The first one. But he plays Loki, and through he lives in a fairy tale kingdom with all like the open license Disney princesses that they can wrap up.
You know, if there's one thing Hollywood loves, it's the public domain.
Public domain. And he opens up a rift or a portal to our Earth, to New York and our Earth, and a bunch of them come over and are trying to fight. And then what is he trying to do, Cole? He's trying to...
I honestly don't remember a thing.
But Lou Ferrigno is Colossus in it.
Oh, that's right.
When you say Colossus,
I'm pretty much. What was his name in it? Steel. Jack.
Yeah,
Steel.
He's made of steel, so he's a Colossus ripoff.
Yeah, no, he turns into Colossus ripoff.
Colossus is retroactively a ripoff of him.
Oh,
right, sure, yeah. But he, you know, and they all fight, and by this point, Ferrigno is essentially deaf. Like he is, for all intents and purposes, deaf, and he.
So we're talking no Loki.
Iron John is who Lou Ferrigno is. Yeah,
Iron John. That's right. Good Lord.
You're making this up now.
No, it is so very true.
Oh my God.
And they have to fight the forces of no. Casper Van Dien plays Rumpelstiltskin. It wasn't Loki. It was Rumpelstiltskin.
Oh, that's right. Rumpelstiltskin.
Right, and
that makes more sense. If it's fables, yeah.
Yeah, and Rapunzel, Sleeping Beauty, Cinderella, Snow White, and then there's the wolf, who was the assassin that they sent over to track him and find him. It was Red Riding Hood was already there. Like, it's...
Yeah, she had her own thing going.
Yeah, and they all team up to get back and stop Rumpelstiltskin from taking over Fairyland. It's so good. Eddie, you have to see it. Anybody who's listening to this has...
You should. It's like a Sharknado or, you know...
It's made by it's made by Asylum Pictures, for sure.
Or you know, Go Shark Shark-tanic or... Sharkula,
Where's the
and
Shark?
And by the way, I need
to do Sharkvengers.
Oh, Sharkvengers! Damn it,
that's good. That's good.
Don't steal that Reddit.
So yeah, that's one. I'll call.
Don't
that
steal
one
my Sharkula either, where it's a vampire shark.
Oh, I thought that was a real thing. That's you made that up?
Yeah, just now.
Okay, we need to develop both of those.
Yes.
So I'm calling that my first one. That if you haven't seen it, it's awful. It's the worst in the best possible way.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm trying to remember all of the things that, because Catherine had the best. If you ever want to hear just riffs about this, Catherine has the best riffs about this thing, just losing her mind over it. So yeah, that'll be my first one. Oh, by the way, do you know who plays the wolf?
No, can I guess?
Yeah, you can
Leonardo
guess.
Leonardo DiCaprio?
You can guess, Eddie.
I'm gonna say, what's his name? Eric Roberts.
No.
Oh,
wow. Did you ever know who, Kimo, the Ultimate Fighter, was?
Kind of.
If you don't...
Oh, give me a second.
That's who it
is. Yes!
It's
the big stocky dude.
Yeah, it's Kimo, the Ultimate Fighter, plays the wolf. If that gives you any idea of what kind of acting chops this movie brought to the table. Oh, my God. All right, that's my first one. That's the one I suggest.
Oh, my God.
Cole, what's your first one? Do you want to follow Avengers Grimm with?
Well, yeah, oddly enough, I'm going to go a little highbrow here because you forced my hand. One of the things I wanted to talk about, if there's one thing that comics love, especially nowadays, but really always have. I mean, this is, look at Thor. You know, back when Stan Lee created Thor, comic book publishers love the public domain.
Yeah, they do.
And indie publishers love the public domain and dead people.
Dead famous people.
Dead long enough that you can... You know, you can do anything you want with their memory.
We used to call them dead spread. We used to call that dead spread. That's
right. I like dead spread because it doesn't cost me extra money. Old Hollywood.
Old Hollywood.
So,
old Hollywood's so cheap.
That's right.
He's trying to make money on a nickel. Old Hollywood.
Nickel a ticket? How do you think I'm going to make my money? Old Hollywood.
Buffalo nickel.
Oh, wow. It's not taking any plug nickels.
That's
old Hollywood.
Old Hollywood.
So I got to thinking about films that feel like a comic, and I wanted to take it somewhere other than just the superhero and go into the kind of indie publishing type of arrangement. And that movie is Malcolm McDowell and Mary Steenburgen in Time After Time. Can you tell I can't stand Mary Steenburgen?
Is she your Shelley Winters?
She is. She is definitely my Shelley Winters. But you know, she does okay in this. But it's the story of H.G. Wells and Jack the Ripper set loose on 1980s America.
That's fantastic. What? That's fantastic. I have never heard of this before.
You've never heard of Time After Time? Holy shit. I think it's just been made into a TV series.
It has.
Yeah.
No. But it's the evil guy from the original Tron.
David Warner.
Yeah, David Warner as Jack the Ripper.
Oh,
spoiler alert. And
thanks a lot.
just a very cold and calculated Jack the Ripper. Wow. And it plays a lot with the idea of time travel and utilizing time travel to your advantage or disadvantage, as the case may be. And It's basically H.G. Wells apparently briefly became God and invented a time machine between writing.
Yeah, right.
You know, he was just tinkering around down in the rumpus room, and apparently with the through the magic of crystals, just ask Napoleon Dynamite how well that works.
Nice.
And there was a clever way of getting Wells from London and Jack the Ripper from London in the past, you know, 17th century London to 20th century America. And where you can meet Mary Steenburgen. And it's, you know, you get your initial, you know, fish out of water, man out of time.
Yeah.
The only one out of time here, Loki, is you. Oh, sorry, wrong movie. But the you get these great scenes, like a scene where he goes into McDonald's for breakfast. And, you know, he's having to adapt to things.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. But then it settles into a really, you know, old Jackie boy's up to his old tricks again. And
mm-hmm. How long did he wait? Like, here, okay, so, like, how long was he in, you know, 1980s New York before he was like, uh-huh. Yep, I guess I'm here. It's time to start cutting
I think
up.
By the day when he changed all of his gold crowns over for U.S. dollars.
Right.
That was about it. You know, got the money situation taken care of. Now it's time to buy some knives.
There's nothing else to do in 1980s New York except cut up some ladies.
Let's see if this is the Eloy and the Morlocks. Nope, just regular people. And there's a knife store. There's like a whole
a
store.
A guy came to my door.
Nothing but knives. Called nothing but knives. There's like tears coming from the man. No, I made that scene.
A guy came to my door, knocked. I answer it. He presented me with a knife that would cut through a tin can and then a tomato. This is a miracle world.
And a whole suitcase full of I killed him.
And took his knives. That's what I do.
Yeah, that's right. So it's a wonderful movie, but it feels a lot in retrospect like a lot of the clever uses of public domain characters, like the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, for example, which of course doesn't leave its own period. But you see a lot of that sort of thing because there's so much public domain out there. Because lots of people croaked hundreds and thousands of years ago. I mean, what's Homer going to do? Sue you?
That's true. That's true.
So if you can't create the next Homer Simpson, steal from Homer.
I was just curious who wrote this, because it sounds so hokey. So I looked it up, and one of the writers is Carl Alexander, so I looked up what he wrote, because I don't recognize the name. He wrote, of course, Time After Time. Then he in 79, and then he went and wrote a made-for-TV movie, Missing Pieces, in 83, then went on to write absolutely nothing until they thought it would be clever to bring him back to write one episode of the new series, Time After Time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and then the other guy, Steve Hayes.
They found him on the same street corner with Casper Van Dien.
Oh, come on. Rico's Roughnecks. Come on. Right. Show some respect.
Rico's Roughnecks. But the other dude had like a long career. Steve Hayes, he's written Seven Brides for Seven Brothers. He did
Wasn't he in Wings? No, that's Steven Weber. Never mind. I'm good now. No.
But he for in cartoon series wise, he wrote for the Rambo series.
How do you make the jump to cartoon series?
I know. He did Rambo, G.I. Joe, James Bond Jr., Alf, Captain Planet, and then he went on to write extensively for both TV series of Tarzan and Acapulco Heat.
Oh, hell yeah.
Wow.
So he had it a little bit better than the other
Hard dude. Ticket to Hawaii. Anybody remember right. Hard Ticket to Hawaii? You want to talk about a comic book movie?
Yeah.
No, okay, I'm going to challenge both of you to check that movie out because it's a lot of fun.
All right.
But honestly, I haven't seen it in years, but I think it still holds up today. Obviously, somebody thought enough of it not only to make a movie, but to go to that street corner and get that writer.
That's right. They had to wrestle. They had to fight. They had to fight. Fight him off of Casper Van Dien for that shoe. That shoe they were both chewing on.
They were chewing on. Well, the screenwriter is actually a name you'll recognize, Nicholas Meyer, who gave us some of the best Star Trek movies.
Yeah.
I mean, it's insane. Star Trek 6, 4, and uncredited for 2, of course. But yeah, I was like, oh,
you always do that in reverse order.
Well, you know, right?
We're talking about time travel here.
Oh, of course, yes.
Well, funny story about Wrath of Khan is any movie that that Ricardo Montalban is, he has to get top billing as a screenwriter. I don't know why. It's like the Vin Diesel has to win every fight he's in, and it's in his contract. You know that's true, right, Eddie?
No. Yeah. No, no, I thought you were kidding.
He's like the guy in Scott of the Sahara.
No, seriously, that's why if you watch the Fast and the Furious movies, it's completely unbelievable that he could beat The Rock in a fight, but he gets his ass whooped right up to the point at which he does something to win, because it's literally in his contract that he can't lose a fight in one of his movies, which I think is hilarious. I think that is hilarious. Oh, Eddie, so what's your first choice?
I'm going to go way, way out of left field, but bear with me, because this is the very essence of a superhero movie, and that's Nacho Libre.
Oh, nice. That's a good choice.
Well, it was actually when Cole pitched the idea to me. You know,
I peached it.
You peached the idea,
peached it,
too.
Yeah. When he impeached the idea and gave you anyway. two movies sprang immediately to mind, and like almost immediately hot on their heels was Nacho Libre, because I thought, oh my gosh, I never thought about it until I was forced to think, okay, what movies are out there that are superhero movies that aren't based on comics? Because you got it. Okay, the story is, you got a guy, he wants to be something bigger than he is, so he takes on this secret identity.
Ah, yeah.
He creates a costume for himself. He goes out and fights, not evil necessarily, but his opponents for a cause. And that cause being, of course, he's a monk in training at an orphanage. So he's doing all of this, you know, wrestling as Nacho Libre in order to raise funds, so that way he can, because he's the cook in the orphanage, and all they can afford him to give the orphans is really bad refried beans. Like, that's it. Like, maybe occasionally he'll get stale chips from the neighborhood restaurant. Like, they'll put them out in the alley, and he'll come by and pick them up, stale chips, and he'll crunch the old chips on the top of the refried beans. Like, that's when the orphans get like the fancy meal.
Yeah, that's the big meal. That's the
right, exactly. That's like Thanksgiving for them. And you know, but
so basically, so the plot of like 6% of the Three Stooges tourists.
So he does all this in order to get money, that way he can actually feed them not only better food but more healthier food. Like, he starts making these elaborate salads with all sorts of different dressings. Like, and of course, like every good hero, he's not perfect. He has his weak points in the story, where he's earned so much money off of winning him and I forget his sidekick in the movie, the character's name, but he's the skinny guy who played in Epic Movie. I know this is like a really stretch in Epic Movie. He played the Fawn character that was based on the Fawn character in the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe movies. But anyway, they win so much money that he starts to buy fancier clothes and the fancy white shoes, because he's trying to impress one of the nuns, the young nuns that works also in the orphanage. And so it's just such a good movie, because number one, he is such a like a pure-hearted person. Like, there's not a mean bone in his body until he gets in the ring, of course. But what's awesome about it is, and I'm just now realizing, putting two together, he also has a rogues gallery throughout the movie.
Wow,
it's insane, because like every time he goes into a different match, it's not like they're just throwing him in with another like generic wrestler. Every wrestler he faces in the movie is like, they literally could be like a Batman Rogues Gallery character. It's insane. Like, you got the two half boy, half wild, feral children, the little midgets that are like half human, half. it's insane if you haven't seen the movie. They're it's crazy. And then of course he's got the the one luchador that is like, you know, countrywide famous in Mexico. Like, you know, he shows up in the fancy cars and, you know, the orphans come trying to get, you know, his scraps from whatever. But he's like the big wrestler he has to fight at the end. So he's like the, I don't know, like the, if this was Street Fighter, he would be M. Bison, you know. But it's just insane. It is like, it's got every, it hits every mark of a superhero movie without being a superhero movie.
Right.
Nice.
That's cool, man. And
of course, still has a sidekick. Like I said, he's got a sidekick.
Like you got to have a sidekick.
All right.
Well, my next one, I really like this movie. I haven't seen it in a really long time. I need to go back and watch it. But I went with Sky High. Have you? I don't
know. I have not seen that. Yeah, that's one of those that I really genuinely wanted to see, and then I sort of forgot about it until you'd mentioned it before the show.
I want up that. I actually have the DVD, but have yet to actually put it in to watch.
Wow. So Sky High stars stars Kelly Preston and Kurt Russell as superhero parents of a kid that wants to be a superhero. The premise of it is Sky High is a superhero high school, and it's very Disney. Okay, so the reason that I liked this movie and I wanted to bring it up is this is not like a lot of these movies that we talk about, especially now in the theater. It's hard to go to go see a family comic book movie. It's hard to make that happen. Like, you know, we went and saw I was just talking to Cole about the fact that whatever cinemas were do XD were showing all weekend long. They were showing a bunch of the Marvel movies. So they were showing like Avengers, Age of Ultron. We went and saw Ant-Man and Captain America: Winter Soldier again. But they were showing just a whole bunch of them.
Oh yeah, we went and saw Guardians Volume 2 again because I just really was thrilled to have a chance to see it on the big screen a second time.
Yeah, but they aren't like a bunch of people brought their kids to see Ant-Man. Ant-Man's good. Mm-hmm. Ant-Man's funny. Ant-Man's not a family film.
Oh no, yeah, yeah.
You know, Captain America: Winter Soldier, not a family film.
Not as much, no.
But there aren't any. None of these movies they're releasing lend themselves. Spider-Man, I guess, kind of. But I think at that point, you still have to be, you know, probably, you know, preteen or teen to really appreciate what it is, you know, and enjoy it.
There's still enough of an edge there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're talking about people dying. You're talking about, you know, crime and you know, some pretty heady subject matter. And this movie,
evil parents,
this movie straight up, you know, you have a high school full of superpowered kids. You have these teachers, including Kurt Russell and Kelly Preston, who play both parents and teachers, as well as like principals and administrators in this school. And then you have a supervillain that during a fight with Kurt Russell's character in the past, we tried to use a gun that was supposed to de-age you, and it backfires, and it made him an infant.
What?
So he, at the time the movie happens, he's a teenager again. The supervillain's a teenager, so he's in school. He enlists in school to his active
revenge. Oh, that's genius.
He enlists the bad kids, you know, to be his brotherhood of evil mutants, basically. And then you have the good kids that are basically the X-Men, you know, and the story unfolds. There's a big dance, and Kurt Russell's character and Kelly Preston's character basically kind of get kidnapped. And then it's up to the good kids to fight the bad kids and save the family type of thing. It's almost – think of it like Incredibles, right?
Yeah,
it's almost
exactly
like that. Except imagine that it also gives you Kurt Russell in a superhero costume, which for me is huge. Like, Kurt Russell can do no wrong. Kurt Russell is a superhero every day of his life, you know. And
did you see the kid with the million IQ? Huh?
Yes.
World's greatest athlete.
Kurt Russell,
this goes on and on.
Yeah, it can't go wrong. But it's just a fun family movie that has enough pseudo adult. It's like a Pixar. It's almost like a prequel to the Pixar universe where there's enough adult content to keep you interested. And if you're not a, if you're not a fan of the superhero genre, to keep you interested, but kids love it. You know, because everybody has really cool powers. They do good effects, like stretchy powers or invisibility powers. And it's just a fun movie. Think Sharkboy Lava Girl type.
It's funny because as you're describing it, I immediately started thinking about Spy Kids.
Yes. Yes. Think about those type of movies. And there is a subplot in it, which is really interesting, which involves a bus driver that doesn't have superpowers, even though he was birthed from superpowered parents, that really wants to have superpowers, but he can't. So he's the bus driver for the school that at the end of the, and I'm going to spoil it, guys, by the way, there are giant spoilers. Let's post that on the website before but at the end, he ends up falling into Ron Wilson, the bus driver. He ends up, and he's like the best guy in the movie, right? Like just the most kind-hearted, wholesome guy, ends up, getting superpowers in the end, which is what he'd always wanted. So it's almost like this, he's the hero's journey of this whole thing, really kind of in the background that happens. It's just a good movie. It's just a fun movie and it's not based on anything, you know? So that's one thing Disney's always kind of done pretty well is embrace the superhero genre, not based on any superhero licenses. So good for them. And this is just a fun, wholesome one before we get into some deeper, more adult material. So rent Sky High. It's well worth it. It's a fun movie. That's
absolutely
fine. Cole, what do you got, buddy?
Well, gosh, how do I follow that?
I talked a lot. I do that. Sorry.
No,
I'm a podcaster. It has a Mary Elizabeth Winstead in it too.
Oh, there you go. I was going to ask you because I thought myself. I remember the female, the girlfriend character was somebody, and I was thinking Emma Stone, but I thought no, that was before Emma Stone's time. Mm-hmm. So, okay.
And you know who the principal
was? Linda Carter in it?
Yes, Principal Linda Carter. Principal.
Is that her character's name?
Principal Power is her character's name. Yeah, but Linda Carter plays Principal Power. So it's just chock full of like nods, homages to the superhero genre as well. Patrick Warburton does a voice in it. It's a fun. If you know who Jim Rash is, Jim Rash is in it. He played the principal in Community, and he's been in. He was the dean of the school. He's the dean in Iron Man or in Civil War when he's doing his beginning speech in Civil War. Dave Foley
Dave Foley in a giant head.
And Kevin McDonald, which are both alums
Kevin
of
McDonald's the big head, that's right.
Which are both alums of what's the name of the sketch show?
Kids in the Hall.
Thank you. Kids in the Hall. Tom Kenny. Everything is a nod. Everybody's fun. Everything is really enjoyable. That's what I got. Okay. Sorry, I kept going. Cole, what do you got?
No, that's okay. There's one I finally gave it a chance, and this is to take the more modern approach that was launched with a filmmaking, the sort of first-person shooter, if you're shooting film, approach, which started with Blair Witch. I don't know if it or was at least popularized with Blair Witch. And like anything like that, like the any kind of Hong Kong cinema wire fighting or Matrix, whatever the hell they call that multitude of camera thing,
right,
immediately becomes flavor of the month and gets overdone.
Yeah.
Cinema Verite.
Yeah, so, you know, everybody wants to jump on that bandwagon and the misbegotten notion that that's what sells. It's like, no, that's what sold in this context. But this is one where there's a couple of points where just being me overly scrutinizing the thing, I'm like, okay, you have to suspend disbelief at a couple of points because not everything can be found footage.
Right.
Because there's certain parts of the plot that you need those elements to carry the plot, but there wouldn't be found footage in those cases. So you just have to kind of allow a surveillance camera glimpse into things that wouldn't have had a surveillance camera.
Right.
But otherwise, the entire thing is told through footage kind of cobbled together. And that's a movie about a director who was, you know, the getting him into Hollywood, where he was then eaten alive.
Right.
Was the Chronicle.
That was such a good
which
movie.
Essentially got him the god-awful Fantastic Four reboot that then got him the Street Corner with Casper Van Dien.
He tagged, the he tagged out.
The population of the Street
now,
Corner.
Now you got a three-way fight over that one shoe.
Boys, I'll be back. I gotta go direct a film. Hold my place, you know, in shoe
if
line.
You have Chronicle, it is actually a damned good movie.
Oh, it's great.
And it gives you this sort of real world look at, you know, the very Stan Lee concept of with great power comes great responsibility.
Why do you got to bring up Stan Lee when Eddie's on the show?
That's true.
We had a moratorium on Stan Lee. No, I remember watching it. It was really, really good. It took some of the conceptual ideas of what it means to have superpowers and really kind of exploded them out on a macro level. There, the scene in the movie where, you know, everybody has this thought, right? And I know I have it probably once a day. Man, if this car in front of me better be glad I don't have superpowers. Because if I did, you know, I would just throw it off the road, or I would, you know what I mean? Like,
oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, we,
it but, should, you know, at that point, you wouldn't be on the road.
Right.
Yeah.
Sorry to be such a pedant, but I'm going to have to step in.
God damn it. But, you know, there are scenes in it which show you this is what happens when normal human beings with normal human being emotions and thought processes are given immense power and how horrifying it can be. And
in a lot of ways, it becomes the analog of the gun.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, superpowers don't kill people and destroy property. People with superpowers, mind you, kill people and destroy property.
You also get a really good villain's journey in it, too. Like, you get a hero turn and a villain's journey in it as well, which is pretty great. Like, it's pretty amazing. It's a good movie, or good pick, Cole.
Yeah, I feel that is the one of my picks that's going to hit the mark as being the, you know, your comic hero type of movie,
mm-hmm.
Very squarely. But also, it's just a damn good movie. I really don't see this as having been the – I would not have chosen this director for Fantastic Four solely because of this.
No.
But then Hollywood gets that way sometimes. Hey, you did a superhero movie. Come do our superhero movie. It's like, no. Did you even watch this movie?
Right. Like,
because it's not what – you know, this guy should be doing this guy should be doing like the, you know, the summer doldrums films that Matthew McConaughey does between the big budget films. Yeah, I got the summer off. I'll do your movie for scale.
I'll do your Dallas Buyers Club.
That's right. I'll do your Killer all right. Joe.
All right.
I'll do Mud. That sounds good to me.
My phone's ringing. Is it time for another season of True Detective?
All right.
I've got to see this. I when you said the name, I was thinking of a completely different movie. I was thinking
of the Chronicles of Riddick, in which
he doesn't
get beaten up in that either.
You mean the superior film Chronicles of Riddick, right? You mean?
Oh, I'm talking about the Criterion Collection.
That's right.
But after you talked about it, I was like, okay, I haven't seen this movie. I was thinking, whatever movie I'm thinking of is one where there's like an alien invasion and you see it kind of like,
oh,
I guess you've seen it.
Oh, you're thinking of, oh, what the hell? They're making a sequel to that. Now, Skyline? Oh. Are you thinking of Skyline?
Maybe. I know it's got Eric Balfour in it. I think I remember him being in it.
Yes, Skyline. It's Skyline. Eric Balfour.
Okay.
How do I know the name Eric Balfour? He was in bad sci-fi. Yes.
He's been in
yes.
24 in the first Chainsaw Massacre remake. So that's how I know him.
He's in every bad sci-fi TV show that they yes. make in Canada ever. That's his
yes. play. Okay, that's it too. He's like in one of the shark movies that we have on DVD, either like Malibu Shark Attack or one of those. I don't know. One
yeah,
of
it's got Eric Balfour in it. How the hell do you... It's like the only one that knows these people's names. There's like four actors that just appear in all of these movies. Damn it. No, yeah, Eddie, you should see Chronicle for sure. Like,
yeah, it seems, and I see that he, it's got the Human Torch in it, too, so it makes sense why he ended up in Fantastic Four.
Oh, it does have that Michael B. Jordan. Well, this was his, Chronicle was his breakout role.
That's probably where, yeah, I remember hearing him the first time. I definitely need to check this out. I have not seen this movie, but man, I'm intrigued and I'll buy it.
Yeah, it's worth seeing for sure. Good pick, Cole. Eddie, what do you got, man?
All right. I'm going with one that is so near, so dear to my heart.
Oh, no.
It doesn't get any nearer and dearer than The Meteor Man.
Oh, shit.
I love this movie. I saw it in the theater, immediately thought it was one of the greatest superhero movies I'd ever seen. It came out the right time, I think, where you could get away with doing a movie like this, because you sure as heck couldn't get away with doing it now. But
no.
Yeah, Rob Townsend as the Meteor Man, as Jefferson Reed, you know, just your typical nerdy dude. He's got the crush on, you know, the hot chick at work, and you know, just awkward. I think he lives with his parents. If he doesn't live with his parents, which is played by Marla Gibbs and Benson, by the way.
He has a name. He has a name. His name isn't Benson.
It's
Robert Guillaume.
Yeah,
sorry.
It's Robert Guillaume. Yeah. It's not
Benicio del Toro.
Benson.
Well, at least I didn't say Benson and Flo.
Listen, when you're done describing the movie, we need to go through the cast, which is amazing, by the way.
That's what I was going to say. It's got every notable black actor in it. It's insane. But, yeah, if he doesn't live with his parents, then they're heavily involved in his life. You know, like, they're there, like, at his every turn. Eddie Griffin plays his best friend.
Which is awesome.
I mean, oh, my gosh. It is the perfect... Like, as far as superhero origin movies, I'm not a big fan of them because I already know their origins, so I'm just ready to get to the thick of it, which is why I love, you know, Spider-Man Homecoming, because it's like, we didn't have to go through his origin.
Oh, I know.
But Meteor Man, you have to do it an origin story, obviously, because he's not based on anything that came before. But, oh my gosh, I love it because Jefferson Reed is like the perfect Peter Parker character if there ever was one. You know, just awkward, nerdy, yet good-hearted. You know, he gets these powers, he uses them for good. You know, he does things to help his neighborhood, to help, you know, his friends, his parents. It's just such a good movie. Let's just get into the cast.
Oh my god, there's so many. And I haven't seen this movie in probably 10 years, and now I want to go back so bad and watch it again.
Unfortunately, I haven't either. I used to I killed it on VHS, but you know, my VHS has gone in the way of the dodo, unfortunately. But James Earl Jones plays one of the most hilarious characters you will see in a movie.
Oh wow.
Plays this character where, you know, of course this came at a time where Kid and Play was really big. So you had the wild hairstyles that, you know, the afros that were straight up and with different shapes. So they gave James Earl Jones this Kid and Play type look where he's got about a foot and then takes a sharp 90 degree angle at the top. It is insane. Gosh. And he's like, you know, of course it was in 93. So you know what age he was in 1993.
Yeah.
But he's like that typical where he's trying so hard to fit in with the 20 something age group, you know, the college age group. He's dressing the part, he's talking the part, he's looking the part. Oh my gosh, he's a genius in anything he does. He's just got
this is the silliest wig I've worn since Conan.
Yes, thank you.
It was the same wig, they just stood it up. stood it up and cut
guys,
it.
The people they got for the bad guys are just like, it just genius.
It's got Frank Gorshin in it.
Yes, as the mob head, the head of the mob family.
Check that out.
Say it again. Hey, Cole, what'd you say?
I've not actually ever seen that one.
Oh, you need to, because not only does it have Frank Gorshin in it, it's got Luther Vandross, Sinbad, Naughty by Nature, Cypress Hill, Big Daddy friggin' Kane, Don Cheadle, Nancy Wilson. It's got Zeus Tiny Lister. It's got Wallace Shawn.
That's the first thing I ever seen him in. That was my first movie.
Holy crap, Wallace Shawn, that's all you had to say.
It's got Biz Markie playing Biz Markie.
It's got Bill Cosby playing the human roofie. No, wait, that's not right. That's not right.
That's a supervillain name, the human roofie.
That's his real life superhero villain name.
Wow.
But no, yeah,
wow.
Bill Cosby's got such a neat moment in the movie where he's the unexpected hero in one of the scenes toward the end of the big climax. Something happens, or I don't want to give it away to a certain, let's say, character in the story that everyone has a connection to, and he comes out of nowhere to save the day. I mean, he plays basically a homeless man who doesn't say. I don't think he's got a single line in the whole movie. So I don't know if he's mute or he just, you know, doesn't have anybody to talk to. But his
straight pay him scale. That's what happened.
That's a good point. That's a good point. But yeah, no, you're right. It's got like Big Daddy Kane. It's got Naughty, another bad creation.
It's got ABC in it. It's got ABC in it.
As the golden, the little warlords, because all the bad guys in this all have golden hair. They're called the golden lords. And so you have the adult golden lords that are made up of, you know, Don Cheadle, who in War Machine plays Goldilocks.
If you go back and look at Don Cheadle's IMDb page, you will be shocked at what he's been in.
Gosh, I'm not familiar with the guy who the head of the Golden Lords. His name is Roy Fegan. He's been in a ton of stuff, so you'll probably recognize him. Maybe not his name, but recognize him as being just in everything under the sun. Sinbad, another genius character. He plays the typical I was raised white black person that suddenly wants to be as ethnic as he can possibly be. So he changed his name from like Chester to Malik and started dressing the part, started talking the part, and he can't say two words without telling the person, you know, whoever's around, you know, I used to be like this. My name used to be Chester, but now I'm Malik. I'm down with the brothers. I'm down with the homeland. You know, it's like
Sinbad is highly underrated in this day and age. I will tell you that right now.
It's just unfortunately I've been trying to get this like on DVD on something, you know, a digital copy something, but it's just like so hard to get, and it's not on Netflix or Hulu or Amazon, so I can't just like rewatch it. But I did see a couple of bootleg clips that were uploaded on YouTube just to kind of get familiar with some of the scenes. And lo and behold, the news reporter who Robert Townsend and Andrew Griffin has a big crush on. It is the same actress to connect it to another superhero movie that's not based on a comic book. It's the actress that plays Mr. Glass's mom in Unbreakable.
Really? Okay, yeah. Wow.
She came on. I was like, oh, my gosh, Unbreakable. It was insane. But, yeah, you're right. Everybody that you can imagine is in this movie. Everybody is such – and beyond the amazing cast that they pulled together – it's just such a good and inspiring and feel-good, family-friendly movie. It's dated, yeah, because it was in the 90s, but the underlining story is just – it still works. It's such a good movie. Such a good movie.
That's awesome, man. That's cool. Yeah, I haven't seen it probably in 10 years. I need to go back now and watch it because it's one of those things that I need to – it's been so long and it's been – it's such a cool little movie that I need to go back and watch it again.
And after the fact, we now can say that Meteor Man is part of the Marvel Universe, because in the comic book series, He crossed over with Spider-Man, Captain America, wow. Like everybody. He was every issue that came out, like 10 or 12 issues that came out, had some Marvel character crossing over into the storyline. So,
by the way, uncredited, the MC, if you watch it, the rapper at the mall, Chris Tucker. Chris Tucker was in this thing. Yes! He couldn't have been any older than
Like 12?
Yeah.
14?
Yeah, he could. Damn it.
I forgot. That's right. Chris Tucker does have that little cameo in it.
Yeah.
And I just remembered, you know who else is in it? That was big name at the time, but I completely forgot until just now. The scene where Meteor Man goes into the cocaine house, to the cocaine factory.
The cocaine house!
Yeah, to break up the little, you know, like
it's
they're
like a house for drugs.
That's right.
They're in there cutting the cocaine and, you know,
they were scattering, smothering, and covering it.
Yes. Jesus. Yes, there it is.
Wow. The guy who's running the show is Biz Markie.
Yes. Yes.
I'm telling you, they got everybody under the sun to be in this movie. It's crazy.
It's they went all in on this thing. It's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. I think my next choice, I'm going to go with, did you guys ever see the movie Push?
I have not seen that.
I think so. Is Hayden Christensen?
No. No. That's the movie where Nick Fury's trying to hunt him down because he's jumping through.
Okay. No. I don't think I've seen Push.
So, and that's why I wanted to talk about it, right? Push was a movie that starred Captain America and Dakota Fanning. That's his name now, all right? Deal with
Which
it. His
Which
name
Captain
is in,
America?
His
Are we
name
talking about
Red
the 90s?
Brown.
It was Red Brown? Or
yeah, Red Brown was in it, and Dakota Fanning. Red Brown gave up the shoe on the street corner a long time ago, realized.
Okay. I thought they were talking about that movie with Jennifer Jason Leigh and Sam Elliott, but that turned out to be Rush. It's funny. It's just like Letterman on the Electric Company.
You know,
it changed one letter and everything's different.
No, you're saying Rush, but I think what you mean is that one with Sandra Bullock and Keanu Reeves called Speed.
Oh, I was actually talking about the movie Quicksilver.
That Western.
Yeah, that Western.
Oh, not the X-Men.
Oh, wait, no, that's Silverado.
I was talking about Yulee's Gold. No, Push is a... Push
I'll tell you, City Slickers 2, The Search for Curly's Gold.
So not McKenna's Gold with Catwoman.
No. Jesus Christ. Did you realize Gold with Matthew McConaughey.
Not only did we derail this, we actually derailed it onto other rails.
It did.
And it got derailed from those as well.
Yeah. I want to go see Fool's Gold again with McConaughey and what's her butt's daughter.
Not Fools Rush In with Selma Hayek and the Friends guy, right?
No.
Okay, we'll stop.
The Friends guy. So this movie posits, it was released in 2009. Nobody saw it. It was a big budget superhero movie that wasn't based on anything. It stars Chris Evans, Dakota Fanning. It posits a world where superpowers exist, but they're all mental powers. So telekinetics, clairvoyance, people that can heal people with their minds. It builds this. And the reason that I wanted to bring it up is because as much as people talk about John Wick for building this world, for world building, building a mythology around an idea very quickly and very efficiently, this does the same thing. Where you have people that can see the future, you have people that can move stuff with their minds. There's a thing called Division, which is sort of a Weapon X type program that the government's been running since 1945, where they take these people with a propensity for mental powers and do experiments on them, and then use them as agents in foreign wars. So it's, but then people escaped, right? People got away. The origin is Chris Evans' character, who is a telekinetic. His father was a very powerful telekinetic. They escaped Division and went on the run. Division sent hunters out to find them, killed his dad, you know, one of those, you know, that origin story. So he runs to Japan. Almost the entire movie takes place in Japan. So he runs to Japan. It becomes this weird anime superhero type movie where these crazy Japanese gangs running around like Yakuza style. But the reason I wanted to bring it up is because they build a world that has watchers, movers, pushers, bleeders, sniffers, shifters, wipers, shadows, stitches, all of these different type of clairvoyants.
This is really involved.
It's super involved. It's very, very, very involved. And the story is Dakota Fanning is the daughter of the preeminent watcher who is the psychic that they use to spy on people and stuff like that, and they want to bring her back to Division because she's super powerful. Well, she falls in with Chris Evans' character, and Chris Evans' character is trying to protect her, you know, and trying to make sure that she doesn't get, you know, taken. And it's the trial of them escaping these Division hunters. But they build this really great world. Also, it's this, and I put in my notes for this, imagine Batman and Robin, but now imagine it's a good movie. Imagine it's well scripted and well acted, because it's a lot of neon. It's a lot of like super like flashy special effects type stuff, but they use it really, really well. And it got pretty widely panned, in the box office. Keep in mind, this came out in 2009. So what else came out in 2009? You know, we started to see, when did Iron Man come out?
That'd be about right, I think.
Wasn't it more like 2007 or five?
See, that's what I thought. Is we started to see the Marvel movies coming out. We started to see 2008.
Yeah. Okay, and then that becomes the new norm.
That becomes the new norm, and
the ideal.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. It becomes the new norm. It becomes the ideal. So now we've got, you know, this movie comes out, and it's a perfectly serviceable superhero movie that doesn't get the clout or the attention that it deserves, because now it's up against Jon Favreau and Robert Downey Jr. And it's a really interesting kind of fall through the cracks movie where they do a great deal of world building around it. So it's one that I really think that is worth checking out. Like, it's very cool. It's very fun. You don't have to be super invested in it. And this is the movie that got Chris Evans Captain America, by the way. So for what it's worth, it got him into something really cool. But
yeah.
But yeah, go see it. Rent it. It's buy it.
I figured it was either that or Cellular.
Why do you keep bringing up Cellular? Just keep talking about Cellular. All right, Cole, so what's your next one?
Oddly enough, my next one is Cellular.
I'm going to talk about the movie Cellular.
And it has this really superhero vibe to it because, you know, impossible things happen, like finding a managing to maintain a cell phone connection in the early days of cell phones. actually... I had a couple that I was kicking around, but I think I'm going to have to, since we really are kind of coming up on it with so many titles and so many explorations there, you know, you can't gloss over these guys. And I want to talk about one of my favorite superhero movies because it takes the concept of the superhero and puts it in the real world, in the sense that the superhero is your pulp hero, your fictional fantasy character. And in the real world, we all sit around and wait for somebody to come along and make movies of our favorite superheroes.
Right.
And this is a movie that's really less about the hero and more about the kind of typecasting in Hollywood, the nature of celebrity, and the sort of indelible quality of pop culture.
Okay.
And that is, of course, the incredible Birdman, or The Unexpected Virtue of Ignorance. I have to be the same way I am with Dr. Strangelove.
You say the whole thing.
I stopped worrying and learned to love the bomb. You know, it's like I can't say push unless I also include based on the novel.
I was waiting for that joke. Or, when I did push,
based on the novel, push by Sapphire. You have to throw it all in there. Just I'm like Cardinal with I'm sailing away. But Birdman, or the unexpected virtue of ignorance, heretofore be known simply as Birdman.
Thank you. Legally, thank you.
Yes. Or simply as or. So I, you know, I'm covering both sides of the. But you have Michael Keaton brilliantly poking a little fun at himself about this sort of level of typecast celebrity that might have been. This movie is purpose built for this actor. And so, you know, in that way, if, you know, those of us who, it is very much a love letter to our youth or childhood or what have you. And basically plays this kind of washed up. that damn street corner again.
That's right. He was on the street corner this time, the fictional street corner for himself. That time.
But he plays this this aging actor, Regan Thompson, with what's her name? Emma Stone is his estranged daughter. Zach Galifianakis is his agent, best friend. He's reached this point in his career where he is synonymous with a trilogy of films based on a comic book character called Birdman, to the point where he's sort of haunted by this persona of Birdman that wants him to return to the character. And, you know, even the slightest mention of the character sends people in a tailspin. Just, you know, oh, Birdman 4 is coming out. No, it's not. That's not what I said. But he wants to legitimize himself into a Broadway production.
Right.
He's written, he's directing, he's starring in it. And it's sort of his struggle to rise above the, you know, this persona that he fell into, that he's become synonymous with. And it's because he falls into these moments where the Birdman character is Superman character manifest. That's Keaton in the suit.
Right.
As well as out of the suit. And, you know, the Birdman persona has zero respect for his human counterpart. He's just absolutely indifferent to the, you know, all of his dreams and his career. What he needs to be doing is Birdman. You be Birdman. You get off your ass and be Birdman. This is what we are. And it's just a wonderful, and the cinematography is just insane.
Oh, it's brilliant.
There are probably like I think they tried to beat Goodfellas' record for Steadicam shots.
That's true. Yeah. Gosh. There's the longest Steadicam shot. One, yeah.
Yeah. There's one scene where literally you start out, you know, following one hallway and stuff, and you break off with some other. It's almost like you're, you know, you're following somebody you know, and then somebody else you know comes along, and you just sort of abandon those people and follow the other people, and it takes you into this strange psychological, and you know, it's just very gripping drama, but becomes very surreal at times.
It's really good, and it is, it does fit the milieu of what we're talking about today, because, you know, Birdman does appear multiple times in this movie. Like he'll have a moment where he's on the street, and, you know, Birdman comes, like, there's a meteor strike. Is that what happens? And then Birdman.
Well, yeah, it's just like literally everything, just all of Broadway just becomes engulfed in some sort of imagined war with meteors and bombs and explosions and giant robotic vulture
conflagrations and all kinds of things happening, and
you know, everything that should be in Birdman 4, The Phoenix Rises.
It's such a good movie, such a good exploration of what it means to, like you said, what fame means, but also what it the idea of identity and the idea of the alter. It really explores alter ego as well.
Yes, very much so.
It's a good choice. That's a good one. That's a good one. Eddie, what do you got over there? You got a good one for us lined up?
Yeah, I got one that I enjoyed it so much that when I knew we were going to do this, I sat down and watched it again yesterday to refresh myself. It's a little old movie by I'm drawing a blank on it. It's Sean Gunn. Am I saying the name right?
You're saying the name right, yes.
Okay, I just want to make sure I drew blank for a second. The Guardians of the Galaxy guy.
Yes.
Called Super.
Oh, so good.
And what's so funny is I saw this movie just by chance on Netflix and watched it, thought it was brilliant, and then just kind of didn't revisit it again. And later on, I started hearing people talking about Sean Gunn, he's going to be doing Guardians of the Galaxy, yada, yada, yada. Never made the connection that he did that movie as well until I went back and watched it today. And I thought, oh, Sean Gunn. I was like, he did this too. That's pretty cool. But, oh my gosh, it's got Dwight from The Office. I'm drawing blank on the actor's name because I don't have any of this pulled up in front of me. He plays, again, like that typical, even more so than Robert Townsend's character in Meteor Man, that typical kind of like humdrum, just kind of fades into the background type of guy. You know, he's married to Liv Tyler, but he's obviously in this loveless marriage. He loves her. She's obviously moved on. She's a recovering drug addict and so forth. And so she ends up leaving him, which kind of throws his world upside down, obviously. Decides he needs to do something to win her back because he comes to find out she's in the clutches of this obviously this criminal, you know, this guy who has like this little band of criminals. He's like the head, played by Kevin Bacon. It's got a lot of alumni from other superhero movies, by the way. It's got Michael Rooker in it. He plays one of Kevin Bacon's thugs. In Guardians, okay, he's what's his character's name in Guardians? I've only seen the first one. So
Yondu.
Yondu, there you go. I kept wanting to say Vondu, but I knew that wasn't right. who's the guy that hangs around Yondu the whole time? Like his little right-hand man?
Yeah,
that's James Gunn's brother.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I thought. That's what I thought.
Sean Gunn, yeah.
Yes, there you go. That's why I wasn't sure if I had the names right, because I knew there was two guns connected to the
movie. Two guns!
Nice. He actually plays the same role in this. He plays the right-hand man to Mark Rooker's character. And I thought that was so funny that he repeats it in Guardians of the Galaxy. It's got Ellen Page, you know, Kitty Pryde. She plays, like, the comic shop employee. He goes – when he decides that he's gonna rescue her from Kevin Bacon's clutches, he decides – he's going to become a superhero. So he goes, how do you become a superhero? You go to the comic shop and you buy comic books. He goes up to Ellen Page and says, do you have any comic books with superheroes that don't have powers? And then of course she goes, well, the obvious one's Batman, you know, and you have this, that, and the other. So he decides he's going to become, basically he's more Daredevil than anything. He makes his own costume. He decides I need a weapon because of, it's very much Batman Year One at one point, where he decides for the first two nights, he's literally squatting behind a dumpster where nothing is happening for two nights. The second night, he hears a noise, he rushes out, and he's got his little digital recorder so he can, like, have, like, his Punisher War Journal thing going on. And he rushes out, comes back, and says, it was just the box blowing across the street. And then he turns off the recorder and goes, I'll pick it up later. I don't want to give up my position. And stuff like that where he takes it so seriously. So he decides he needs to go where the crime is. So he goes and stakes out. He goes to the library as a librarian. I'm doing a research paper on areas that are high in drug sales, and she's like, really? And he shows up to the library with an obviously fake beard. It's like he's trying so hard to, like, the right kind of superhero, and he's just doing everything so wrong, but you just love him for it. So he decides, he goes out and hangs out. He sees a drug deal going down. So he decides he's going to jump in and stop it. He jumps this black guy who's dealing the drugs and promptly starts to get his butt whooped because he has, like, no training. He just thinks, I'm going to put on the costume and that's enough. So he realizes, I need a weapon. So he goes back to Ellen Page and she's like, well, you know, Green Arrow has bow and arrows and this, that, and the other. And so he decides his weapon is going to be a big old foot long, you know, plumber's wrench. And he proceeds to go out with this as his weapon. He goes back to the little street where the guy's dealing drugs. The guy's counting his money after a drug deal, realizes someone's standing in front of him, looks up, and it's him. It's, you know, Dwight with this big wrench and just smacks him over the head, probably kills him, you know, because he hits him so hard. So it just snowballs there. He starts taking out his aggression. Like, he starts going after guys who are cutting in line outside of a movie theater. he runs to the car, changes into his costume, comes out and smacks the guy across the head with this big wrench. The guy's, like, bleeding profusely for cutting in line. And his girlfriend starts to scream at him. He hits the girlfriend. She's on the ground bleeding. So you're thinking, oh, my gosh, he's doing more damage than the bad guys are. So it sounds like a silly movie, but it, as it progresses, it's got so much heart. Like, Ellen Page figures out he's the guy on TV, the Crimson Bolt, he calls himself. And so she's like, you're the Crimson Bolt. And so she immediately wants to be his sidekick. So she becomes his, you know, Speedy, basically, or his Robin. And it just, as the movie progresses, you actually see him, like, he takes this hero's journey where he starts learning more effective ways of doing things. He never becomes, like, Batman or Daredevil, but he learns just enough to where he doesn't get himself killed. And I can't even get into, like, the whole climax of the story because that would ruin it for everyone who hasn't seen it. But trust me, it pays off in spades. It is such a good movie. And
go ahead. Yeah, no, finish.
Go ahead.
So I was gonna say, tell me who the Holy Avenger is.
Yes, that's what I was gonna say. Yeah. Nathan Fillion plays the Holy Avenger. Basically, if you've ever seen Bible Man, you know, with Willie Ames.
Oh,
he's that character, but he's called the Holy Avenger, and he's basically, like, you know, that typical, he's got the big cross in his chest, which, as a comic creator who's worked on Christian comics in the past, I can't stand it when people make a Christian superhero and immediately they want to put a big cross on their chest. That's, like, the biggest cop-out in the world. Anyway, he's got the big cross, he's got, like, the long flowing Jesus hair, and, you know, It's so genius how they play up Nathan Fillion, how he continually drops in throughout the movie unexpectedly. It's so genius. And now that I saw it a second time and realized that it's done by the Guardians of the Galaxy guy, I think, of course.
Well,
this is why this movie that I never heard of, that probably no one saw in the theater, is so genius. It's so well done.
Here's the cool thing about Sean Gunn, right? Sean Gunn has a team of actors that he'll use on every movie he possibly can. They become friends. Like, what was Jeff the Ravager? Cole, you just saw Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Again. Yes.
Jeff the Ravager, Steve Agee. If you watch At Midnight, you know who Steve Agee is. Steve Agee was in this movie as the other employee at the comic book store, Eddie.
Oh, really? Okay.
So that's Jeff the Ravager. He was also in – what he does is he finds people that he really likes, friends, and then casts them in everything. That's why you have Michael Rooker. That's why you have Steve Agee. That's why you have his brother. That's why you have all of these – Nathan Fillion worked with him. Nathan Fillion filmed scenes for Guardians 1 and 2 that weren't used because they got cut.
Oh, that's right.
Because he's Simon Williams. He's Wonder Man. In the Marvel Universe. He's just never been in a movie.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah,
I'd forgotten that.
If you go back and watch the first Guardians, and I think even in this Guardians for sure, when Kurt Russell
I haven't seen the new Guardians.
Okay, well, there's a scene where they're kind of – they do a flashback again to the 80s.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
they're outside of a theater, and a bunch of fake Simon Williams movie posters are up outside.
Oh,
the theater.
No.
Oh, that's right.
Oh my gosh, I'm loving it already.
Yeah. So that's the brilliant thing that he does, is build these teams of people that he absolutely loves. Everybody in Super worked for scale. Nobody got Kevin Bacon, Rainn Wilson at the height of his career.
Rainn Wilson, there you go. Sorry,
Ellen,
I can.
Yeah, Liv Tyler, Ellen Page, all worked for scale.
Uh-huh.
Because they love the guy. That's how awesome it is. Like it's a really cool little movie. It's brutal, though.
Oh my gosh, yes. It is. It is very brutal. It's definitely not your Marvel movie. It's definitely on the level of Kick-Ass, if not more so. It's very brutal. You know, when you talk about that, it reminds me of how Sam Raimi is, how he uses certain characters throughout, and also to another degree, oh my gosh, he's one of my favorite directors. I'm drawing blank. Lethal Weapon and Superman. The director of Lethal Weapon. What am I? Good
Donner?
Night. Yes, Richard Donner. Thank you. Good night. Richard Donner is the same way. If you see Maverick, he drops so many people from previous Donner movies into Maverick. It's insane. Margot Kidder and Danny Glover and everybody else. It has a little cameo.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's not uncommon for certain directors, like Scorsese is another who just, you know, there are people he loves to work with.
Yeah, because with Donner, people have said it's like when you work with him, it's like he makes you his family. And that's why a lot of people behind the camera on his crew, he literally will keep the same crew from movie to movie to movie to movie because he treats them like family and they respect him for that. So that it reminds me of what you're saying here, Andy, about Sean Gunn.
Have you ever seen and this is another one that I wanted to bring up, but I didn't, and I'm kind of pissed off about it. And we won't go too far into it, but have you ever seen the movie The Specials?
No.
With Rob Lowe.
Shit. Yes, and that's Sean Gunn. Or that's James Gunn.
Oh, my
Gunn.
God.
That's James
okay,
Gunn.
See, now it's all making sense. Oh, my gosh. He has dipped his toe into the superhero pool before more than once.
Oh, yeah. This is one you need to see, The Specials. The Specials is very reminiscent of what's your favorite? With
Mystery Men?
Yeah, of Mystery Men, where it's so good and so, and I'm not even gonna go into what it's about, but it's so funny and it has everybody in it and it's great. All right, so as we wrap this bad boy up, we've gone pretty long. Thank you guys for sticking around. I have one question for each of you. Okay, Cole, are you prepared?
I'm prepared. I'm ready.
All right. The superior non-comic book superhero film comes down in my mind to two movies. It comes down to Unbreakable and Dark Man. Unbreakable and Dark Man. And we don't even have to talk about those movies. We have talked about them. We will talk about them again.
Vote them. That's it.
Which one's better and why?
Unbreakable.
Oh, really?
I mean, I will give you Dark Man all day long, but if you want to do a Pepsi challenge.
I do want to do a Pepsi challenge.
You know, are we in Englewood? No, this is it has to go to Dark Man.
Because if this is the Pepsi challenge, they're both good. Unbreakable is Pepsi. Dark Man is Mr. Pibb. You know.
Wow.
Yeah, and Eddie and I are Gabe Kaplan.
Wait, what?
Is anyone old enough to get that joke?
Yes.
Wait, say it again. Say it again.
I said that you and I are
Gabe Kaplan, the teacher from Welcome Back, Kotter.
Yeah.
But didn't he administer the Pepsi challenge? Wasn't that his job at some point?
Definitely.
Damn it.
I made the Statue of Liberty, and this is the Pepsi challenge. It's a goddamn!
That's how he talked, too. All right, it's fine. I guess that's all the conversation we need to have about that.
I think we do need to address that, yes, Dark Man was – actually, my mom was wanting to go see a movie with Catherine and I back when that was out, and there was, like, dick in the theaters. I'm like, let's go see this Dark Man. That was back before anyone knew who Liam Neeson was, as far as I know.
Yeah, but everyone knew who Larry Drake was because of Dark Knight of the Scarecrow.
Oh, yeah, and Dr. Giggle, which actually came out later.
You've got to love Larry Drake. You've got to love that man.
It's such a good movie, though, guys. It was so
before its time. It really is.
It was so before its time, and Raimi... You had Raimi doing Raimi shit all over up in that.
He predicted the home 3D printer.
Yes!
Oh, my gosh!
Of meat.
Of human flesh.
Yeah, so instead of using that plastic filament, he used Spam.
That's right.
Oh, God.
He just snapped into a Slim Jim.
I kind of threw up in my mouth there, gentlemen. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Slim Jim by the yard or something.
Just feeding it in like a reverse Play-Doh fun factory. Just shoving it in from behind.
That was my first exposure to Liam Neeson. That was.
Did that come before or after Rob Roy? I can't remember.
I'm not sure, but... Yeah, Darkman is really a genius movie. It is very genius, and I saw it in the theater at the South 8, close to Redbird Mall, and it was nothing like I was expecting. I mean, for the opening, the South 8, where I also saw Turtles and RoboCop. But this is the thing about Darkman; it gets you so early on, you thought you were going and seeing one thing, and then that opening scene where Larry Drake, they get that guy. And he has his henchman grab the guy's hand, and he puts the cigarette cutter over his finger, and then I thought, oh, this is gonna be an awesome movie, because I thought this is gonna be brutal. It works on so many levels, but it's hard to say that which one's better, that and Unbreakable.
I think though that where Unbreakable edges it out is that Unbreakable is moving into a very cerebral zone.
That's true.
It is what I often refer to as a thinking man's movie.
It's the thinking man's comic book.
It is. And there are, it's so layered with so many, it's hard to really articulate, because it's just, there's so much going on there that you don't get anywhere else. And a lot of that is coming from, essentially you've got this story that is a slow burn, which is Shyamalan at the height of his powers. And this sort of subtle reveals. And what, again, it's Shyamalan at his best. What he does is give you everything at the outset, but you don't know you've been given everything at the outset. And then the more you think back on what you've already seen, what you already know, you're like, and he gives you every bit of 110% the Lex Luthor-esque, very thoughtful, very manipulating, calculating madman.
Yeah.
In Elijah.
Yeah,
and yet at once you have this sort of sympathetic character that then you lose all sympathy for.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it really showed the acting chops on Samuel L. Jackson, because that's something we don't get to see. We don't get to see toned down from
Samuel Jackson. Yeah, oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah, he barely yelled.
Yeah. He only yelled fuck 6 times.
I know.
That's how we got the PG-13 rating right there, guys. Sorry. We just got PG-13.
Where Unbreakable succeeds Darkman is because Darkman fails when you get Darkman 2 and Darkman 3. Unbreakable succeeds because of Split. The upcoming, whatever it's going to be called, Mr. Glass or Unbreakable 2, Electric Boogaloo, whatever it's going to be called.
Mr. Glass half empty.
My gosh. Can you talk about a more moving, more exciting moment than the final scene of Split?
I did not
where you where I almost thought they're gonna give us David Dunn. They're giving give us David Dunn when they were panning through that cafe. But I thought no. And then when you see him start to appear from behind that lady sitting at the counter, I thought, we were watching it, and I yelled out, yes! And Colleen's like, what?
Catherine and I were, like, screaming at the television last night.
I was screaming, and Colleen's like, what? And I was like, look! She was like, oh my gosh, that's David Dunn! And I was like, yes! Oh my gosh. That was, like, goosebumps moment. It was not the R.L. Stein kind, but, like, the good kind of goosebumps. Oh my gosh. And I'm telling you, I cannot wait for the next chapter. I'm dying.
Oh, well, you know, the thing about it is, within months of that film's release and all of the, you know, the I didn't get it, there was some word that was meant to have been a trilogy.
Oh, yeah. He said that from the onset, from Unbreakable.
And then, you know, 15 years later, where the hell is my trilogy? What are you, George Lucas?
Well, yeah. And again, it's like he probably didn't do it on purpose, but he was very clear with Unbreakable that it was the first chapter in a trilogy. But the thing is,
somebody
we didn't see that split as being the second chapter until it was revealed.
Yes. And what's brilliant about that is it split fits brilliantly or perfectly into the same universe.
Oh yes,
as Unbreakable.
Yeah,
it makes the Unbreakable universe work. Or you know, it you know, if you allow for Unbreakable, and for Split both, what that gives you is a world in which it's like certain conditions that people have that are like mental conditions that aren't detrimental or anything.
Yeah.
I think I've spoken repeatedly on the show about the condition synesthesia. You could literally go through your whole life without knowing you're any different than anyone else.
Right.
And so you have opposite ends of that same extreme.
Yeah.
Where David Dunn doesn't know he's any different than anybody else just because until that was nothing to suggest that it was ever there in the first place. And the opposite is someone who recognizes their greater potential, mm-hmm. but they're accustomed to not being taken seriously.
And I love that they're not just giving us another villain for the Unbreakable storyline, but they're giving us another hero in the girl.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
It's so good. But all right. It is. All right. We gotta do the thing where we wrap it up. So one thing I want to say to everybody before we get off of here is starting as this drops on Friday, this is especially pertinent to fans of both the Rant Core Pit, Isle of Toys, and this show. GameStop is beginning their buy one, get one free clearance sale again.
Just in time.
Buy one, get one half off.
It's buy one, get one free. Not half off, Cole. Buy one, get one free.
Free? I've got to go.
It's on again. It
doesn't start till Friday, Cole.
It doesn't start till Friday, but you can go camp out.
Don't camp out.
Okay.
So I just wanted to make sure everybody was aware of that is coming up. I know it's a big important time for Cole and I.
And that is like right after Eddie and I have spent the beginning of Friday at a Toys R Us, which is what we plan to do.
So what is that about? What are you guys doing? What's coming up for you guys?
Force Friday.
Yeah, buddy.
Yeah, the Rancor Pit is going to have our Force Friday event again, and this time we're going straight to Toys R Us. We're not going to waste any time at Walmart. We're going to do the opposite. We're not going to go to Walmart where they haven't put anything out yet. We'll go to Walmart later the same day or later that morning and go pick up the 6-inch Black Series, because Toys R Us only brings in one case for the Force Friday event, so it gets swallowed up by the first person in line. And but you know, like we were telling people, the last two Force Friday events we went to, like, go down the street to Walmart, they're open and they've got all of them in mass.
Yeah,
don't feel like you missed out.
Good. Yep. So what do you guys have coming up as far as shows or anything people need to listen to? I know there's some big stuff on the horizon.
Well, this coming Sunday at 9:30 Central, you can catch our second live show of Figments. That for me and Colleen, we're going to be the topic is investigating the investigators.
Nice. And we're going to have,
I like that.
We have special guest Michael Cross, who was on our Gorn Arena episode. He's going to be dropping knowledge on us on the Warrens of the Constantine
family.
Yeah.
He's
putting on the gloves and taking some swings at the Warrens.
Aren't you already at war with the Warrens?
No, and that would be the other one connected to the Warrens through the Amityville house, but what the hell?
Oh,
why
the
not?
Warrens. The Warrens are the group that, or the family from
From The Conjuring.
From The Conjuring,
Amityville.
Yes, yes, okay.
Annabelle and all that. They have Annabelle in their, we're going to be doing that. We're going to be having Michael on because him and I had this discussion one day talking, we were talking about, Figments and how much he enjoys it and this, that, and the other. And we mentioned one time that we're going to be maybe in talking about the true story behind The Conjuring, mostly The Conjuring 2 at some point in the future. He goes, he was like, those Warrens. He views the Warrens the way I view Stan Lee, basically. I'm just going to leave it at that.
Nice.
So tune in Sunday, 9:30 Central at DallasOnAir.com, or if you miss it, catch it on our YouTube channel. There you go.
Fantastic. So, Cole, what do you got coming up? When's the next Isle of Toys?
That'll be actually 2 weeks after Figment, same time slot, 9:30, 10:30 a.m. Central. Eddie and Colleen have the first Sunday of the month, and I have the third Sunday of the month, right before the Rancor Pit Live.
Yeah, it's always right before a Rancor. So if you're on Rancor schedule, you're going to catch either Figments or Isle of Toys. So either way, you're going to win.
Absolutely, and I'm working on trying to get somebody from the Lost Toys over in Dallas to be on the show. Our next episode is They're Not Dolls.
I love it
where we talk about the rise of the action figure, and I've got some really cool stuff planned for the near future for Isle of Toys. It's just been amazing, a lot of support for it right out of the gate, and I want to say right now, I want Mr. Medina here, I need him to come in early one Sunday because we're going to talk about some heroes on the half shell.
Nice.
in the near future.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, we were purposely saying from the get go, we don't want it to just be Rancor, so we didn't want it to be me like guest host like every other show.
Yeah, I think there's like at least two key episodes where he's gonna have to be my guest.
I know. It's like other than that,
G.I. Joe and Turtles.
I'm not allowed on the Isle of Toys because we don't want people like, oh, it's just Rancor again.
You gotta cross contaminate that thing. Toys.
What are they gonna do next? Talk about Star Wars toys? Well, damn it, there's three episodes right there.
Let me guess, the other episode's going to be G.I. Joe?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, because in honor of
the battle episode.
In honor of the first episode of Isle of Toys, for that Sunday on that Rancor, I purposely wore my G.I. Joe shirt in honor of the first episode of Isle of Toys.
Nice. Sure. Oh, man, you guys are awesome. Thank you, Eddie, for joining us tonight. We really appreciate it. Cole, as always, it's a pleasure.
Thanks for me as well.
McDonald. and not Ronald McDonald.
All right, well, we're gonna get out of here. Next week, Cole, what do we got coming up next week? I know it's super exciting. I'm
next
stoked.
Week is really cool. I'm hoping that we can get Steve McCauley and Catherine on the show because in honor of I believe the 51st anniversary of Star Trek, something like that, whatever it is, the Friday of next week's show is the actual anniversary of the original air date of Star Trek. So tune in a week from today for Comics, The Final Frontier.
Yeah, buddy. I'm excited for that. All right, everybody. Buy, collect, enjoy your comics. Watch the movies that we've suggested. They're awesome. They're super fun. Sorry if we spoiled anything. Not sorry if we spoiled anything. Most of these movies have been out for like 20 years, so suck it. And join us.
That's right.
Say goodnight, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. We'll talk to you next week on
Hey Kid. It was a guy in the crying game.
Oh, my God.
Dang it!